Welcome into a new episode of the Bengals Beat podcast. I am super excited. This might be my most exciting guest I've had yet, and that means there's been a lot of Bengals players in here, and you guys take the cake over that. I have Jimmy and Robin Burrow in studio today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you.
So I will start with why you guys are in town. Obviously, you spend a lot of time in Cincinnati on game days, but what you're in town for is arguably even more important to you guys than what happens on game day, and that is what you guys are doing with the foundation. So do you just want to kick it off and tell us a little bit about what today specifically your goal and, you know, talking to various media outlets, and then we can get into what exactly your foundation does and some of the exciting events you guys have coming up?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, game day is definitely the most important day of the week for us, but today we are very excited to talk about Dine for Nine. It is an initiative that we are kicking off this Saturday on September 9th, 9-9, because 9 is a very important number in our life. we're trying to raise some money for Joe's Foundation, the Joe Burrow Foundation, to help fund our second round of giving. That will be, we're starting to take applications now in September, and then we will be gifting towards the end of the year in December.
I was reading about it, some of the restaurants that you guys have involved for this Dine for Nine event. How did you go about creating this event and then picking the restaurants that are going to partner with you guys for the specific event?
Well, we have an advisory board here. We have an advisory board in Baton Rouge and some people from Athens on it. And so we had meetings. Amy Floyd, our executive director, organized different meetings to see how we could get this thing off the ground. And then Game Day Communications also joined in with us to get the word out. And it kind of started out, didn't know how big it was going to be. And now counting Baton Rouge, Athens, and in the Cincinnati area, there'll probably be over 300. We're close to 300 restaurants right now. So, that's awesome. We knew there'd be support, but you never know how much. And we couldn't be happier with the way it's going right now.
And so for this is a Cincinnati Locally podcast. Yeah. The restaurants that they are partnering with are Donato's, Dewey's, Keystone, Penn Station, Tom and Chi, and Gold Star. And if you dine at any of those restaurants on September 9th, that restaurant will make a donation to the Joe Burrow Foundation. So that is how you can get involved and help here. I do have to ask, since you guys are frequent visitors in Cincinnati, are any of those restaurants ones that you like to eat at?
We change it up. I mean, there's all kind of great food places here in town, and so we literally pick different ones depending on who we're with and what day of the week it is. But also, I might mention too, the restaurants are great, and we're promoting everybody. We hope everybody goes to these restaurants. But in case you can't, then you can go to joeburrow.org and look up a way to donate to the Dine for Nine. And we give $9, $999 or $999. So on the 99. So any of that'll work.
Awesome. And how did you guys, I know Joe's talked a little bit about why this specific cause is important to him, but he always gives both of you so much credit for the work that you guys do and really spearheading this foundation. How did you, from the day that he was drafted, how did you guys formulate the idea of taking something where we'd really like to do this and then thinking about what cause you wanted to, a lot of people want to give back in Joe's position when they have that platform to do so. How did you guys take the idea from this was maybe something we thought about wanting to do to actually making it happen and now growing it to what it's become and hopefully what it will be over the next decade?
Well, I think that it all started really with Joe's Heisman speech back in 2019. And I think that really spearheaded a lot of donations for the Athens County or the Athens County Food Pantry. And so knowing that his I guess, things that were near and dear to his heart with food insecurity. We certainly wanted to keep that in the forefront for our foundation, for Joe's foundation. So food insecurity is a big issue that we want to help to just bridge that gap for kiddos and families who have that challenge, but also helping in the mental health arena and trying to bridge those gaps as well is a really big part of what we want to try to help with. And I think that for Joe, his experience through COVID and hearing a lot of the challenges that especially students or children are having now coming out of COVID, and listening to my stories that I would share with him coming home from school as a school administrator, I think that those things really, really spoke to him, and he wanted to make sure that we address mental health issues as well.
When you just brought up the Heisman night, what was that night like for you guys? I have so many years to go back from, and you just brought it up, so it sparked my
memory. It was crazy. I mean, you never even think about it with your son growing up that could he win the Heisman, and then it was we're there in Times Square, and it's a reality. And you know, to me, being a coach for so many years, and both of us being fans of college football, to be around Archie Griffin from Ohio State and all these great players, it was special. And then, you know, we had no idea what Joe was going to talk about. And then 31 seconds is all the time he devoted to the food insecurities and poverty in the Southeast Ohio area, Athens. And I think that was the first time that Joe and Rob and I realized that he had such a big platform, and that his words that he puts out there mean a lot and can actually change people's lives. And it did, because of what that has turned into. And in a roundabout way, that's now, you know, what we try to do with the Joe Burrow Foundation.
So he didn't tell you guys what he was going to talk about in his speech?
No. he really didn't. I'll let Jimmy tell the story, but he, you know, he really just had a few bullet points, and he spoke from his heart. Yeah. And I think that the whole world really reacted to that.
Yeah, there was so much going on, and it was about 2 hours before the ceremony, and we were getting dressed, and we kind of panicked and said, wow, we haven't even asked Joe about what he was going to talk about. So I went down to his room, and it was literally only a couple hours, and he was sitting down at his desk, and I said, you got anything prepared? And he said, I'm just jotting a few notes down. And so later, probably not, it might even been a year later, I looked in his suit coat pocket, and he still had, I found that little card or whatever he index card that he had the bullet point. So I'm keeping that forever. But it was real general, and like Robin said, I think, not even sure he knew exactly what he was going to say, because if you ever watched the speech, he really never even looked at his bullet points. And but it affected a lot of people, and you know, we've kind of built on that.
It's funny because I'm fortunate enough to cover the Bengals on a daily basis, so I'm at every single one of his press conferences every Wednesday, and he always says, you know, jokes with us, like, media is not really my thing, but he's really good with public speaking. So, I mean, in that speech showed it.
Yeah. He just doesn't like time taken away from his preparation for the Sunday. I mean, he respects the media. You know, it's part of his job, and you know, being one of the leaders of the team. I mean, he gets it, but he is good at it. He knows how to beat around the bushes like anybody that's in front of the media all the time. But he appreciates, I think, all the work that the media does.
So since we're talking about the Heisman, and you move from that, he goes to LSU, then that magical season, he wins the Heisman, then becomes the first pick in the draft, then he moves to Cincinnati, then your Super Bowl, then it's AFC. Has it just felt like a whirlwind for you both as his parents? Like, and you had said you never really thought about the Heisman being something that could happen for your son, you know, when growing up. And then all of this stuff, it just seems like he's reached, not obviously he will say that the mountain hasn't been completely reached until he gets the Super Bowl that he wants, of course. But all of this stuff has happened so fast. So what's that been like for you guys as his parents?
Well, I think that it's certainly, especially during his second year at LSU, I mean, things started off so great, but every single week it just kept getting better and better and better. And it was really an amazing year. That was definitely a whirlwind year for sure. And then coming out of all of that and going through the draft process, it just is very surreal. I think that we always thought, well, we definitely always thought that Joe was special. Every parent does. But for him to be able to live out his dream, I mean, this is his dream. You know, he was the little kid in the backyard throwing the ball to the neighborhood kids, just like everybody else is today, you know, and now here he is, and he's the starting quarterback for the Bengals 2 hours, 2.5 hours from our backyard. And it's really special.
It really changed our whole family's life because I retired after 2018. If it hadn't been for him and going to LSU, probably I'd still be coaching. Robin, I hadn't seen any home game in 2018, so I retired to be able to go to all LSU games his senior year. And then Robin has been a school principal for last several years, and she would probably still be doing that. But with the foundation and all the things going on, you know, she wants to be even more a part of it and to help Amy with certain things. And so she decided to give that up too. And we both loved what we did, but you know, these are more important things that we can do.
So what was the year at LSU like? Tough loss the other night. I'm sure that was a tough loss.
Oh yeah.
Saw that game.
I mean, we didn't know. Joe had just told us going into the season that, you know, he's pretty low key, as you know. He just said, we're going to be pretty good. So I said, that probably means they're going to be really good, because he didn't even say that a whole lot. But it was the first time, and I saw it as a coach perspective, and then she can probably address the parent perspective. But every week that football team got better. And yeah, it had great players on both sides of the ball, and Coach Ogeron, who we love, did an awesome job. But you know, you just watched them getting better and better, and really there was not many games, or maybe one or two, that were even the outcome was in question in the third or fourth quarter. So you know, when the President of the United States starts coming to games, then you know it's gotten to be pretty big. So
it's a pretty big deal.
President Trump was at the Alabama LSU game that year, and also the national championship game. So when things like that happen, it's a pretty special year and a team.
The LSU game day atmosphere, I mean, I've heard so much about it, but it's on my bucket list to go. I'd love to go to a game at Tiger Stadium. But what I think is unique about that team in that year is I have a couple of friends that went to LSU. And because of that year and just the amount of fans that just came out of the woodworks, that obviously LSU has a diehard fan base, but I feel like that just re-energized their fan base. But they're now living in different states and they have their NFL teams that they like, but they're still Bengals fans. Like they came up, one lives in Houston, one lives in Atlanta, two live in Atlanta, and they came up wearing, you know, Joe Burrow LSU stuff, and you know, they're fans of other teams. But I feel like that year, that team, I haven't seen it in college football where they've connected with their fan bases. They were that popular with their fan bases that no matter where they went in the NFL, that year meant so much to those LSU fans. It is really something special to see.
Yeah, I think that year was it was magical in Tiger Stadium. It was magical in Baton Rouge, that the whole state. And I think that the team, the camaraderie with that team, you could just see the energy on the field. Like, you could tell that they loved each other so much, and they were playing for each other. They were playing for Coach O. It was very special. And I think that there is rarely a game that we go to that we don't see a Joe Burrow LSU jersey. Yeah.
Home and away.
Home and away. I mean, and there, I can't remember what game that we were at. There was a dad, well, actually two dads, two young boys. The dads had on whatever away team we were playing, and the boys had on Joe Burrow LSU jerseys.
Wow. Yeah.
So it was, that's pretty special.
Even at the College World Series, and we had on our number nine baseball jerseys for LSU, but they were number nines at the World Series.
I'd have to think more about it, but I can't remember a team that had that much of an impact on their fan base that, 10 years down the road, people are still going to be wearing, like you said, LSU Burrow jerseys or Justin Jefferson. Like, that team made such a big impact on LSU fans' lives.
And there's the personalities on that team, starting with, Coach Ogeron, were crazy. And so then Justin and Jamar and Joe and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, they're big names in the NFL. And we had 14 guys drafted that year, would have been 15, but Thaddeus Moss had a injury. So it's still on people's minds because they see them every Sunday, and all those guys give LSU all the credit in the world, so that helps too.
As a Cincinnati grad, I am super bummed out that we missed out on having Joe Burrow as the quarterback of the football team, but I'm happy that he got that experience at LSU. I'm not sure Cincinnati would have given him that type of magical role.
It was a very difficult decision for him. Yeah. He loved Coach Fickell.
Coach, like a dagger to my heart when he Coach left to go to Wisconsin.
Coach was on the staff at Ohio State, when Joe was there. And Joe and our whole family think the world of Luke and his family. And it was a very hard decision. It took it was honestly a couple weeks for Joe to decide whether he was going to come here to UC or go to LSU. And I mean, I think things worked out pretty well.
I think so too.
The other thing about LSU people and Southeast Ohio people, I mean, Joe's made his mark in football, but they also know that if Joe's involved in something and the Joe Burrow Foundation, then I mean it's easy to get people to want to be a part of that. Mm-hmm. And as I said, the advisory board that's in Baton Rouge does a great job. And so the Dine for Nine is huge down there this coming Saturday, and they got their first home game. Athens and the surrounding community is, they couldn't wait to jump on board. And then again, I think 200 or so restaurants here, and almost 300 in those three areas that are joining in this event on Saturday. So, as I said, not only they support Joe on the football field, but anything that Joe does that's important to him, and the foundation certainly is, they'll support that also.
Well, and I think I should talk about the mission. To provide resources and support to the underprivileged and the underdeserved is the mission of your foundation. I probably should have brought that up earlier on in this podcast for those tuning in that don't understand what your foundation is all about, but it's awesome what you guys are doing with this.
Yeah, it's Joe's mission. I mean, he said he wanted to be something with food insecurity and children's mental health. So, the underprivileged and the underserved certainly need help. And this foundation does a lot. Amy does a great job with all the different things. And as I said, people want to be a part of it, and they know that it's a great cause. So, that's – and Joe's – even though he's not visibly here today, I mean, he knows what's going on, and we talk to him about things, and he's certainly aware that you know, his foundation is to do just what you said, to serve the underprivileged and financially and with other resources.
He also decided to do some things in the off season, like invest in the volleyball league. Yeah. And did you guys see the clip from the Nebraska game the other day?
We were actually there.
Wow.
It was an amazing event.
Yeah. Tell me about it. I'd love to hear about it.
92,003 people
in
Husker Stadium.
That's
watching
incredible.
A college volleyball game. And it was one of the most exciting things that I think that we've been a part of.
Yeah, she's from Nebraska, and of course I played football at Nebraska and graduated there. And Joe and Rob and I are both founding partners of the of the league.
Right.
So I'm employed by the league also. So Rob and I were there representing the league.
Oh, that's
which kinda
awesome.
Which kind of played into, hey, it's Nebraska and they're breaking this record and it's volleyball you know, it's between the foundation and the pro volleyball league. You know, that keeps us busy. But that was incredible. It broke the women's. You know, part of the reason we wanted, and even Joe wanted to get involved in it, because it promotes women's athletics. And my mother was a great basketball player. Robin was a
average athlete.
No, you're well.
I doubt
she
that.
Was very
I doubt
competitive.
And, I was competitive. That's a nice way to put it.
So, to be a part of that that event Wednesday that broke the world record for a female sporting event was pretty special in the stadium that I played and
wow.
My two older sons also played in that stadium, and she grew up watching Nebraska football, so. It was crazy.
So I obviously read that, you know, volleyball in Nebraska is huge. And in that region, it's just really popular. But were you guys expecting that type of turnout for the volleyball game?
Well, we knew that they were hoping to break the record, the volleyball record. I didn't realize until that night that they were hoping to break the women's sporting world record.
Yeah, Wisconsin had the volleyball record.
Yeah. So we knew that it was going to be big, and we knew that it sounded like the stadium was sold out. So by the time they added all of the extra seating on the floor around the actual playing surface, 92,003, and we were two of them.
Wow.
The football games can never break that record because they – you know, there were people on the floor, and the volleyball court is smaller than a football field. So they're pretty proud of the fact that the football can never break that record. But yeah, it was a special night for us to be involved in this new league. And Omaha has the Supernovas. They're one of the seven teams in the league starting in January. And so
Columbus has a team.
Columbus has a team.
The Fury. They will also be playing in starting in January. They'll be playing at Nationwide in Columbus.
We have some of the best players in the world signed up throughout the league. And Kerry Walsh Jennings of the sand volleyball, beach volleyball.
Yeah.
She's
incredible.
One of the owners of the San Diego team. We've enjoyed getting to know her, but it's all good.
How did that come about? Is Joe a big volleyball fan? I know, obviously, your guys' ties to Nebraska, but how did that come about?
The president of team management in Columbus, I competed against him in the Arena Football League back when I was with the Iowa Barnstormers. We had a guy who might know the name, Kurt Warner. He was our quarterback. And Dave Wenham coached with the Tampa Bay, and their quarterback was Gruden, Jay Gruden. So we got to know each other, and he reached out. We wanted to know if we would be interested in helping start Arena Football League. We talked to Joe, and he said, but we'd also maybe going to get involved in volleyball league down the road. Well, we flipped the script on that because there was so much interest in women's volleyball. and Joe was still on board, and so we've kind of been on board since on the ground floor. So it's been good to watch. You know, thinking maybe we'd have three teams, so now we have seven, and then we're adding three, and the next year, so we'll have 10.
Wow, that's exciting.
Yeah, it's fun.
Well, that's really cool that you guys were at that game. I mean, I saw the clips, and as a former college athlete, seeing a women's sport like that get that much attention is just outstanding. So I was excited about that. What is Bengals game day like? Since I got to know kind of how LSU game day was like for you, what's Bengals game day like for you?
So game day, we usually start with our tailgate as soon as the parking lot's open. Meet up with a bunch of our friends from, honestly, most everyone that we tailgate with is from the Athens area. But we also have a lot of friends here in Cincinnati and people that come from out of town.
Family,
lots of family. So we start with that and we head into the stadium as soon as the gates open so that we can get settled. And that really helps for me, at least, get my nerves under control. Because once I see Joe on the field and see that he's always calm, cool, and collected, then I start to settle in a little bit.
I've seen you guys from a distance at games. Do you go to every away game too?
We do,
yeah. We've been to every game since the Joe's rookie year when the COVID restrictions didn't allow you to go to every game. But yeah, we've home and away, and it was tough with her having to get back on Monday, but we don't have to worry about that now.
Yeah.
So it's going to be good. But game days are great. You know, again, a lot of friends and family. And
I was listening to Dan Hord's podcast with you and Jimmy Chase. The Chases come to your tailgate as well?
Oh, yeah, they always come. And kind of went back, even back at LSU, we didn't ever really sit with them, but we were near them, and we would kind of figure out how many touchdown passes Joe was going to have to Jamar, and we still do that. So it's kind of it's good luck for us to hook up with them. And so we try to do that every game, home and away.
Are you able to watch the games not as a coach, or is your coaching hat still on when you're watching? What's that like for you?
Well, you know, I was always a defensive coach, so I've kind of gone the other direction. So I watch Joe most of the time to see the protection by the offensive line. But then when Lou Anarumo and his guys are out there, it's fun for me to watch what he's trying to do on defense, or what he does on defense. And I've known Lou for a long time, so he does a great job. But it's still most of my time is spent watching Joe. And then she watches him on the sidelines instead of watching the defense.
Yeah.
That's not true.
Are you guys like incognito? Do you wear nine gear? No. You know,
pretty much wear nine gear. We're not really incognito.
Okay.
No.
I didn't know.
She's even moved toward the bedazzled stuff, so it's not.
Yes, I have a new wardrobe for the year. I'm very excited about.
And when you go
little sparkles here and there.
I can't wait to see that.
When you go to Cleveland, among others, with Burrow gear on, it's
they're not always very nice.
They're not very nice at times.
Well, that's why I asked if, you know, you guys kind of try to blend in. Nah. Or
we did it to New York. The first time we played the Jets, because people had told us that they're the worst, but
it was fine.
They're not the worst, so I won't. I'll just leave
they
it
are
at
not
that.
The worst.
What of all of
the worst is closer to home?
I can imagine what that is. What, you know, obviously we talked about the LSU game day experience, and the Bengals experience has grown so much, and it's truly just become awesome to see how much the fans and what they've done from a game day experience, but If you bring in all the road games and stuff that you've been to, whether it be like AFC championships, what has been the loudest, hardest venue you think for the Bengals to have played in? I mean, you guys have seen a lot of football games.
I mean, it's the Chiefs. Kansas City. Well, you know, because it's the Chiefs and they have a great fan base, but it's that game always means so much to really the standings and home field and all that. And then, you know, Nebraska is only 3 hours from Kansas City. So then we have tons of fans there from our family, but that's the loudest. They're all, you know, pretty crazy.
I would say the Saints inside the Superdome was also very loud.
Yeah. That was
it's an open air press box, so you can hear everything. Yeah. And when they bang on the wall when the Yin Yang Twins song comes on, it's like so loud.
That was one of our favorite games. Yeah.
And I mean,
you couldn't have scripted a better game. Obviously, I know you guys would have probably liked it to go better in the first half, but they won, and you know, that's all that matters.
There was a lot of Burrow jerseys that day for sure.
The split jerseys too. Yeah. So fast forwarding to now, when you obviously, since you don't live in Cincinnati full time, and I don't know how many training camp practices you guys get to go to, but when you, since you're not there, or maybe you were there and I didn't know that, but when you get a call, or I don't know how you guys find out, when your son gets hurt like he did on the second day of training camp, how do you find out first, and what is that like for you guys as parents?
So this year when Joe got hurt, we found out because a friend of ours saw it on social media and sent us the video. And so that's not very fun. Mm-hmm. That was not a fun day. But I mean, I was mostly worried that it was his Achilles tendon. But it wasn't, so that's good. And when he got hurt when he tore his ACL, that was the year of COVID, and we couldn't go up to DC to that game, to the Redskins, Commanders, whatever they are now. So we were watching at home like everybody else was, and that was hard because we didn't, you know, they cut away. They said, oh, we're not going to show it again. So, you know, I'm thinking broken bones sticking out of his leg and everything else at that point. But, you know, it's all worked out okay.
They called us from the locker room that day. So
yeah, they did. Bengals are awesome. Yeah,
they communicate with us. You know, I can call Matt Summers, the trainer, if Joe doesn't. He's not great about sharing injury information with media or us. So I have to find my own ways to find out. But
I think his theory is it's fine. Yeah. I'm fine. Everything is fine. But it's not always.
Is that how he is to you guys? That he's
always calm.
He gets tired of us asking questions about it.
Just like any kid.
Well, so how many training camp practices would you say you guys get down to, or you don't?
3 or 4. I mean, we don't just overstay our welcome at those. And we had some Joe Burrow Foundation events, you know, where we had some people that had bought time, I think, at the auction for the Joe Burrow Foundation, and spent the one of the practices with Robin and I. So that was fun, and you know, it's, we go to practices, but to tell you the truth, it ends up being more social than us actually getting to watch Joe, because we've gotten to know so many, many people. And every now and then we get to go out on the field. But once again, we don't push that envelope very, very often.
Are the contract talks stressful for you guys as parents?
You know what? Joe's got a great team of people, his agents. He's got a contract agent and a marketing agent, and a financial agent. They're all wonderful. And we know that he's in good hands with them. Yeah. And, you know, I know that it will end up working out. I hope that it does, at least. I'm staying positive 100% on that. I'm sure that he will be here for a long time. So I don't really stress out about it too much.
And we kind of take the lead from Joe. And I think he's really good at not letting things like that affect what he does. On or off the field. So, you know, we just know that the talks continue. And
well, the But that's commendable on his end, because I remember last year Jesse Bates talked to the media about how the contract stuff really like got to his head and mm-hmm. you know affected him, and it was awesome to see Jesse be so honest about it, and mm-hmm. it was like relatable for people that are going yeah. through things. Like he showed that it's okay to mm-hmm. you know not be okay with things, but it just seems like that's exactly yeah. who Joe is. Well, or you know,
I think Joe and his agents and Katie and the Bengals, I think they had a kind of had an agreement. Mm-hmm. Let's don't
yep.
discuss this in the media. And that's one of the reasons there's not a lot of information mm-hmm. out there. Yep. And I think that's the right way to handle it.
Yeah. Well, now that I talked about the past with the Bengals, I want to get your guys' thoughts on the upcoming season. What do you think about the team? And yeah, you mentioned earlier that Joe said, I think we're going to be really good. They turned out to be really good. So has he told you that yet?
No, he has. And so that's positive. And, you know, you never know how the new additions are going to gel with each side of the ball and with the locker mm-hmm. room. But everything that he's told us is positive. I think the Bengals have done a great job of when they add players, you know, character and how they're going to react in the culture that's already established. That's huge. So when they bring in, you know, or Orlando Brown or Irv Smith or Trey Hendrickson a couple of years ago, then they have a good idea that not only those guys are going to help athletically, but they're going to fit in the locker room. And so I think everything's positive. And if we can get the quarterback healthy, then we'll probably be in good shape.
Do you have any thoughts? What are you most excited for the season?
I am just excited to see Joe back out there on the field. I'm sure that Bengals Nation agrees with that. And we're hoping that will be this Sunday.
Do you ever think back? I mean, I was the one that asked him in his press conference. I was like, how's it feel to be fully healthy heading into a training camp? And I was like,
did you jinx us?
Well, I think he knocked on wood. I think he did knock on wood. But it just seems like it's like such a bummer. Yeah. But I mean, he just keeps rebounding and showing how resilient he is.
Well, he's very focused on staying as healthy as he can and you know, doing a great job in his off-season workouts with his trainer, and eating healthy is a big, huge part of what he really is all about. So all of those things can help contribute to getting back quickly from injury. So we're hoping that this Sunday is the day.
This is not wood, but I'm knocking on it for that.
That's right.
I'll just give you guys a chance if there's any other events that you guys have upcoming or anything else that you guys wanted to get out about your foundation, what you guys are doing before we close this podcast out.
Well, I mean, the Saturday Dine for Nine mm-hmm. is huge. That's going to allow us to move forward with the new grant applications. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we can get our goal is $600,000 possibly to be raised in the three areas. So anything people can do to either get on joeburrow.org or go to these restaurants, the participating restaurants, to help us reach this goal, and then to utilize the finances to, as we talked about, to provide resources for the underprivileged and the underserved. And
we're excited to push that money right back out into the community as quickly as we can to help to support. So we hope that people will participate.
And there are going to be other things down the road, but we're focusing on this right now because of those new grant applications that are out there. And as I said, everybody, the restaurants here in town have been unbelievable. And they're on board to help Joe's foundation and this event. So Dine for Nine on 9/9.
Awesome. Thanks so much for tuning into this podcast. And Robin and Jimmy, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
All right. Thank you.